You're listening to Bit by Bit, July 11th, 2009. Hello and welcome. This is Bob Sprankle with Bit by Bit, a podcast by teachers for teachers. How's everybody doing? I hope you're doing well. It is summertime in the United States, and I've been getting ready for BLC, Building Learning Communities, that's going to be taking place later on this month down in Boston. And I've been starting to get some podcasts out with a couple interviews, and I plan to have many more once I do go to the Building Learning Community. So stay tuned for that. But today I'm going to work on a reflection that I've been meaning to do for a while. And it's going to center around the program Scratch that I've been using for the past 2 years in the computer lab with fourth graders at the elementary school, Wells Elementary School in Wells, Maine. And I think it's an amazing program, and hopefully I'll be able to convey why I think it's an important program to use with students in a lab situation and certainly in a classroom situation, and some of the benefits that it affords. And then what I'd love to hear is your own insights into the program and how people have been using it, and different ideas you have about it. I'm going to go through the lessons that I've set up for the fourth graders, and I will include the packet that I refer to that I give them at the beginning of the project, and you can download that just to compare and see what I've done. All links will be in the show notes, everything that I mention and all the resources, most of which point back to the MIT site for Scratch, will be included. So first off, what is Scratch? Well, it is a really simple programming tool that I guess the best way to describe it is that it looks like Legos in a sense. You can snap different programming commands together, almost like little puzzle pieces. Maybe that's a better metaphor for it. It comes out of MIT, as I said, and under the group led by Mitch Resnick, called Lifelong Kindergarten. And I will include a podcast link to 2007 at BLC when I got to hear Mitch Resnick talk about Scratch and the work coming out of his Lifelong Kindergarten group. Mitch talks about in that podcast how they came up with the name Lifelong Kindergarten. And as I remember him telling it, the name sort of talks about how when we have students in kindergarten, or at least when we used to have students in kindergarten, possibly with No Child Left Behind pressures, kindergarten has changed from more exploratory time. But we let that age group do a lot of exploring is basically what their group's name is all about. We let kindergartners build, we let them tear down things, we let them explore, and Mitch talked about how as we let students go along their school journey, we take that away from them more and more, and this is an essential way to learn, an essential component to keeping the brain engaged and having an inquisitive scientific mind, and I also believe helping students with algebraic reasoning, which I'll discuss in a little bit. So that's where they came up with their name. As I said, it's a really basic program for learning how to program, but it offers so much more than that. So if people are hearing, oh, this is going to teach kids to program, I have no interest in that, that's just one characteristic of it. It teaches so many mathematical concepts, and then also that algebraic reasoning, which I will explain in a moment, but I think that's one of the strongest points of it. So I will describe how I've done my lessons, and again, everything will be in the show notes, and sort of how I introduce Scratch to the students. The first way that I introduce them to the program is to not talk about the program at all, but to have them end up in unfamiliar territory. And I feel like I'm doing this a lot already in the lab, that I want kids to be in situations where they have to problem solve using each other as resources or trying things out. And lastly, asking me for help, because I really want to be their last resource. In fact, one of the outcomes for what we assess every day at the end of class is the three before me. And I ask how many students asked three of their peers before they asked any teacher for help with things. So one thing that I want to point out with the algebraic thinking is I got to hear Greg Tang last year. He came to our school. He is a math writer, lecturer, just an amazing mind. And if you ever get a chance to see Greg Tang, definitely do. And he asked the question, what is this algebraic thinking buzzword that we talk about? And as I remember Greg explaining it to us, algebraic reasoning is where you can take your thinking after you've learned one type of problem solving and then be able to use that in unfamiliar and new circumstances. So, you know, a lot of what we do in math, he talked about, is we learn tricks to solve problems. You know, let's say that it's multiplication and you learn certain algorithms that would help you solve those problems. Well, those tricks may be faster, but do we really understand the process that we're doing? And, you know, he works a lot with place value and things like that with the group to kind of illustrate this. Algebraic reasoning is where you're able to take what you understand with that one concept and be able to then go into unfamiliar territory and problem solve because of that understanding, that true understanding. Greg, you know, definitely explains it a lot better than I'm doing here now. And I, you know, he's got a book that actually addresses this. So I'll let you explore more with him. But I think that in the lab, in the computer lab, that's really what I'm trying to do a lot with kids is that, you know, they'll encounter a problem with a certain application. And that application itself is not what's important. It's that they've been able to solve that problem. And that type of reasoning will then hopefully help them go and sit down with any other application and to use that same kind of reasoning. Now, I'm a Macintosh person. If you've listened to any of my podcasts or read my blog, you probably have gotten that sense. So I mostly come from a Mac side of things. And I'm sure Windows operating system is a lot like this too. But being a Mac person, I can only really talk about how the operating system for Mac works. And the thing that I've always appreciated about the Mac operating system is that in order to do one thing like save a file, make a new folder, whatever, there's like 15 different ways to do that on a Mac, you know, and basically you find the way that you like, but there's always more than one way to do something. And I'm sure that applies in the Windows system as well. But the thing that also helps me when I'm using a Mac computer is that one thing that you learn in one program is going to be very familiar in another program, very new. So what I've been trying to do, and a lot of this has been inspired by Vicki Davis talking about this with me, I've been trying to explicitly teach ways to look at a program and then hope that, you know, that applies to other programs for kids. So in other words, Vicki talked about, you know, really breaking down certain parts of looking at a program like menu, toolbar, things like that. And then letting students know that, wow, you know, if you look at the menu bar in this application and you understand what's being offered there, you're probably going to find that in another application. You're going to be able to take that knowledge along with you. So before we even get into Scratch, I take kids into an explicit lesson about menu items and in the Macintosh operating system. And I help them identify what application is running. That's a really important skill to have because even working with adults, a lot of times I'll see adults say, I'm trying to open Firefox and nothing's happening. And then I see that Firefox is the active application and all they need is a new window, let's say. So I really help kids try to understand that before we head off. I have them look for similarities and patterns within the menus and start to define the most important menu items and then just delve into it and try to figure things out about the application by looking at what's available in the drop-down menus and predicting the different uses that these items would have. Now, when I do this lesson with students, this is the most that they've ever looked at a menu. Even though we've been, I've had them for 5 years since kindergarten, this is really the most explicit lesson about what menus really are all about and how much information we can find in them. So that's sort of a new thing for them, even though we've been using computers for a while. And what I'm trying to do is to give them that first chapter of where are you going to go for information to find out about this new application that I'm about to introduce you to. I have a mystery application that I keep telling them. You're going to love it. I'm going to give it to you in a second. But you can't ask me for any help with it because I know nothing about this application. So if you get stuck, your menu items are your first place to go. And then these lessons carry on. And of course, I spent a whole nother lesson just on the help menu item in the Mac operating system and how you can find a lot of answers right there. The thing that I've noticed, I'll back up here a little bit. The thing that I've noticed improving with this type of explicit teaching is a reduction of what I call the blank screen syndrome. And when I got into the lab 3 years ago, I saw this happening a lot, and I see it a lot less now. So to me, that's my litmus test of hopefully things that I'm doing in the lab are improving confidence in students and also giving them the tools that they can go figure out things themselves. And what I mean by the blank screen syndrome is actually coming across a student who is sitting with his or her arms crossed and staring at a black screen on the computer. And what this means is that the computer's asleep. And I usually, I used to come up to these students and say, hey, what's up? What's going on? And they just say, it's not working. And they shrug their shoulders. And as I said, their arms are crossed. Well, that's when I encourage them to try anything, do something. Now, I know what's going to happen, what will happen for this machine is they just need to click the mouse or type something on the keyboard and they're going to bring it out of its sleep. But I want them to discover this themselves, that, doing anything is better than sitting there with your arms crossed. I don't expect them to know the solution. I want them to discover it. And I constantly tell them, you're not going to break this. Try something. So a lot of times they'll wiggle the mouse and that won't wake it up. And I'll say, hey, that was a great idea, but it didn't do anything. Try something else. Some students are really frustrated by this, and they want me to fix it, and I just say, try. What are you gonna do? If they really get stuck, then I tell them to turn to the partner next to them who was successful in waking up with the computer and ask ask them what they did to have this happen. So talking with Vicki Davis and reading her work again, she helped me really get a lot clearer on this. Part of what I used to believe is if I just ask those questions, then kids are going to start to understand, I got to figure this out myself. But, some of this has to be explicitly taught. And I think, especially with computers and many other things in our world, kids have gotten the exact opposite message, perhaps in school, perhaps at home, perhaps, in all kinds of places, of not to try something. If I try something, I might get laughed at, I might make a mistake, I might get yelled at. Certainly with computers, a lot of the message that we give kids is don't touch my computer. You're going to erase everything. I've got important work on that. Here's the phone. I'm going to stop for a second. So you can't really, I'm back after that little phone call. You can't really blame students for being hesitant to try something with a computer. Computers are seen as very expensive machines, not to be messed with. And I'm guilty of that as well. I've told my daughter, you know, don't touch this computer. I'm working on something right now and I don't want it to go away. And so, you know, probably that's not a good thing to say about these tools, you know. And in my computer lab, I definitely am constantly saying, you can't break this computer unless you push it off the table. You're not going to break it. Try anything. Don't worry about it. So I've seen a lot less of the black screen, the blank screen syndrome. Recently, a student said in a class as we were doing this lesson I'm about to explain, the sandbox lesson, afterwards she said, Mr. S., you know so much about computers that if we ever have a problem, we can just come to you. And I said, no, you know, actually it's the opposite. I don't want you to come to me. I want you to be able to go and figure it out yourself. And that's what I'm really trying to do with you here. As I started the lesson, I started talking about the Apple stores. And I love the Apple stores. You go there and there's people in different colored shirts. And there's one shirt, I don't know if you've ever been, but the people that are up at the Genius Bar actually have shirts that say genius on it. And I asked the students, wouldn't you love a job where you actually are called a genius? And I talk about this conversation I overheard with one of the geniuses talking to a customer and helping her solve her problem. And at one point, the customer said, how do you know all this? How did you learn all this stuff about the computer? Which, you know, kids ask me all the time, too. How did you learn all this? And the genius said what I would answer too. And he said, I just played with it. I just played with it and tried things. And I think that's what's so great about a computer. You know, and again, I'm mostly a Mac person, but you can just get in there and try things and start to learn. And usually that's how I start with a program, is I sit down and I just play. Again, bringing all this previous knowledge from other applications and knowing that certain things are going to work in a certain logic because of my previous experience, but then just trying things out. When I get stuck or I think that I'm missing things, that's when I go online and get some more information, or maybe read the manual, or get a younger student to show me things that I'm missing. So I try to get students to think about that. And again, that's that lifelong kindergarten approach of just building up, tearing down, and not worrying about breaking things. So before I get them into Scratch, I say, that's what I'm going to do with you today. You know, mostly, and this is due to time limits in instruction, and I know this isn't just privy to a computer lab situation, but a lot of what we as teachers do, I believe, is help lead that student through the learning rather than really giving the time needed for self-discovery or discovering of concepts by themselves. And you know, there's definitely a balance that that probably has to take place with direct instruction, let's say, and then just letting students discover things on their own. So in the lab, you know, as much as I try to help students figure stuff out for themselves, I mean, still there is the direct instruction time where I lead them through the program, show them things, and then let them go off. And, you know, I'm always there to bail them out. You know, my dream classroom, and you know, I'm not here yet, I hope to be at this place at some point, but my dream classroom would probably look more like an Apple store where there's a Genius Bar and there's the experts up there being teachers or students who have learned the concepts, and then these groups around the lab where students can go off into their interests with the different programs and different things that they want to do with those programs and continue learning about that. And I call that viral learning, and I'll talk about that a little bit with how Scratch works. So I tell students we're going to go into sandbox mode, and this is a term that you hear a lot in computer work, where if you're programming or building something or, you know, trying things out, you go into sandbox mode where you can build and just kind of make a mess and not worry about it. And Second Life is a good example of this, where they actually have sandbox locations where you can go and build, and then every 24 hours the sandbox is wiped clean, so anything you made there is picked up after yourself. And again, kudos to Vicki Davis for really talking me through this part here. So I asked the kids, you know, do you remember playing in sandboxes when you were a kid? If you could say, you know, one word of what that was all about, what would it be? And most of them say play, you know. And I talk about how, yeah, you were put in a sandbox and you didn't freak out. You didn't say, oh my gosh, what's all this sand? What am I supposed to do with this sand? What's that bucket over there? You just played. You didn't think about anything. And that's what I want you to do with this application that I'm about to give you. When we're in sandbox mode, you're all by yourself. You're in your own sandbox. You may not ask me any questions. You may not ask anybody else any questions. But don't worry, you're only going to be in there for about 5 minutes. So don't get frustrated. Just try things. Now, I start this with a program that I know that I'm very confident that they're going to immediately attach themselves to. And this is a program that's been sitting in our dock on our computer for the past 3 years that they've never actually even gotten to try because I've never mentioned it. And basically, it's Lego Digital Designer. And so I just show them where it is. I say, start it up and go have fun. Now, some students really have a conflict with this sandbox mode. I've even had some students who have gotten frustrated to the point of tears. And again, I, you know, that's when I break my cone of silence and go over and say, look, you know, you can't break this computer. I just want you to try things. People are going to show you how to do this in a moment. Just relax with it. But this is such a different way of learning for many, many students, because I think in our schools we lead them through so much that students just rely on the teacher to do the learning for them rather than to go in and explore. So they bring up Lego Digital Designer, and they're off and running. And, you know, I say, leave your speakers on so I can hear what you're doing, and, you know, to see. And I walk around and I watch. Before I do this, there is a little nasty trick that I play with them to help them become more self-sufficient and do some reading on their own rather than relying on me. And I do say that I will help you with one thing before you start this program. When you start this program, it's going to ask you a question. There's going to be some text that comes up on your screen, and it's going to ask you a question. And you need to decide all by yourself how to answer this question. I'm not going to help you. If you answer it correctly, you're going to have a lot of fun with this program. If you answer it incorrectly, you're going to be frustrated. But remember your purpose, is what I tell them. Your purpose right now is what? And I ask the students to tell me, and they say, we're in sandbox mode, which means what? I ask. And they say, play. I said, that's right. You're supposed to play. You're not supposed to do anything else but go have a good time with this program. If you're true to that purpose, if you stay true to that purpose, you'll know how to answer this question. So what's been happening for the past 3 years is when they start up Lego Digital Designer, it immediately asks, do you want to update? And I've left it like that. I haven't let this tool update for the past 3 years because I want that question to come up every time. And basically, if the student does say yes, update, then they're going to be watching a bar of the software downloading, and it would probably take all night for that software to download it, update, because we're in a lab situation. Our internet is okay, but all those machines updating will. I usually leave them on overnight. So I really want them to try to figure this out themselves and stay true to their purpose of play, and also a little bit of literacy of really reading what's on the screen. Instead of asking, that goes along with the blank screen syndrome, where a lot of pop-ups will come up on the screen asking students to do things, and it used to be their first reaction was to raise their hand and ask me, and we've kind of gotten out of that routine as well. They're really making decisions themselves more. So usually most of the kids make the decision, don't update, and they're right into Lego Digital Designer, and they're playing with Legos. And if you don't know the program, it's very fun. I know very little about the program. I've kept it that way so that I can't teach them anything. And in fact, I tell them I know nothing about this program, which is a little stretch of the truth, because after 2 years, I've learned a little by having the kids teach me. So they go into the program. Those that have made the incorrect decision and updated, they're sitting there with a bar on their screen. So after 5 minutes of suffering with that, then I stop everybody, have them, we have flaps on our computers, so they put the flaps down. So nobody knows who made an incorrect decision. It's kind of hidden. And I again ask them to reflect on what their purpose was, and those that are successful will be able to answer play. And I asked them what they were asked to do with the program, and the decision was whether to update or not. And those that stayed true to their purpose of play were able to continue to play. So, you know, hopefully this is not, oops, you made a bad mistake kind of lesson, but, you know, really take your time, and you can make your decisions if you stay true to your purpose. So then I teach them a way to force quit out of that application. So there's a little bit of learning for the whole group, because I've never taught them that skill of how to force your way out of an application, because there's no way to quit it once you start this update. You have to force quit. And then at that point, they go back in and they make the correct decision, and everybody is having a great time in Lego Digital Designer. So at that point, like I say, they have about 5 to 10 minutes of sandbox mode. They can't ask anybody questions, but then I open it up and I turn on the projector and I get out of the way and say, if you discover something and you want to teach other people, come on up to the screen and present that. And let the students teach everything about Lego Digital Designer. And of course, they're showing me things that I have no idea about, because I have not played with the program at all on purpose. And I also let the students know, if you would rather keep figuring things out by yourself and not listen to the students that come up to present, that's okay. And I think that's a real break from what we usually do in schools as well. Everybody, let's listen. Someone's talking. Let's follow this this lesson here. And perhaps at times a student would rather have that time to go figure it out for him or herself. So I give them that freedom. Then again, though, if they ask a question later, like, how do you do this, and someone presented it, then they have to go track that person down and ask for them to reteach it. They can't really stop the rest of the class to have that lesson retaught. So kids are absolutely in love with the program, and at the end of class, I tell them, you know, you can go home and search for Lego Digital Designer and download that and continue having fun. And next week, we will get into Scratch, which is an even more exciting program. So hopefully I've set the stage by doing the sandbox mode lesson to give them the confidence that they're going to be able to get in there with this new program and just really play and explore and try things. So the following week, students will come back, and I introduce them to Scratch. Now, for the past 2 years, students have learned more about Scratch than I know. And it goes back with that same kind of thought that I did with Lego Digital Designer. You know, it's your job to learn and figure out what you want to do this more than me. I want you to have that opportunity to explore. I've played with Scratch a lot. I've learned things, but every year of both years, students have taught me things that I had no idea about. You know, that's great. It's like that genius bar again, you know, that viral learning. So when they come back in, I take them to the Scratch site, which will be in the show notes at MIT, and I show them some of the introduction videos to get them excited. So they don't even know, you know, that this is a program where they can make their own movies or animations or simulations or games. And so they start to see some of the highlights of the program, and you can already hear them getting very excited. And then I show them, again, I'll have the links to the videos, but I show them the video where Mitch Resnick starts off and he's talking about why this is, you know, a great program and what to do with it. And there's a great quote in that video from another person in the group talking about how this tool is, you know, they think of it as having the potential for kids to be autonomous with it. And I stop the video there and I explain what autonomous means and encourage them at that point to go home and to download this program that we're going to be using in a matter of minutes, and to go home and learn it and sign up for an account with Scratch and continue with the tutorials that I'm going to offer you here, but you could learn it all at home and come back next week a genius and start showing me stuff. And a lot of kids take me up on that. They go home and they immediately download it and see that, you know, I don't need to wait 6 days before I get back into the computer lab to really start exploring and creating with this. And I think that's just one of the greatest things about Scratch, is that it really does have more of a reach to something that can be done at home quite easily than a lot of other things that are being used, at least in the lab and at school. I try to do a lot of my lessons that are web-based so kids can go home, but there's so much support already with Scratch that really the teacher is just not necessary for them to continue going. So then I talk about different ways that I will help them learn Scratch, and I talk about different ways of learning, and again, I reflect back on how I like to learn computer programs by just playing, and then when I get stuck, that's when I go and look for a video first, because I'm a visual learner, and then I'll read stuff, and then, you know, after I'm really frustrated, I find a person to help me, and usually it's a student that will be able to figure it out for me. And so I talk about, you know, different ways that they are able to learn things. Again, you can go home today and download all of the booklets and cards that I'm going to introduce you here and just be completely self-sufficient and don't let me slow you down. But I also want them to know that, you know, a lot of times we are asking students to do direct instruction experiences, and that I'm going to start with them there on this first day. And I will admit that this is not my favorite way of learning, especially with computers. When I go to a workshop and someone is showing me something about a computer program, usually I've gone to that workshop because I have hit a wall or I need to learn it quickly. And I'll be honest, when the instructor shows me a couple things with the program, I usually just take off on my own and start exploring. Again, I have no right to come back and say, could you tell me how to do something that he might have already explained when I was off playing on the application by myself. So there's a certain balance to direct instruction and self-exploration. But I tell them I'm going to lead you through this Getting Started manual. I'll have the link in the show notes. And we'll go through each lesson entirely as a group. And I ask them to stay with me for each lesson, because if they do go off on their own path and try different variables, it will take time from the class to get them back with us. And I think that really stands out in my mind as you know, one of the inherent problems of a classroom that's with 20 to, you know, X number of kids. That I know some classrooms are 30 plus, and you know, we have to process the group together to because of time constraints, I guess, you know. And so again, this is where a lot of that independent learning gets, curbed, because we have, as teachers, we have these demands upon us and we've got to get the whole group through. And I think that's unfortunate to a degree. So we go through that booklet And you'll see in the booklet that each step just gets more and more interesting than the previous step. Like one of the first commands that you're going to program, you start with a little cat in Scratch, is to, you know, have it move one step. Well, you know, by the third lesson, then you're actually doing a dance with music and your cat's going back and forth and things like that. So their excitement just keeps growing and growing through the whole thing. And that's where we end our second lesson with Scratch. And again, I invite them to go home, download it, and continue with their own lessons. But we'll take it from there the following week. So in the next week, I've downloaded the Scratch cards from the MIT site. Again, the links will be in the show notes. And I've printed out only four copies of these for different groups. So there's 12 cards in each Manila pack package for them to use, and these will lead them through, almost like recipes, lead them through the basics of Scratch programming. And I've shown them the basics. Now they're kind of taking it to the next level with these Scratch cards. At this point, I ask them. I've given them their packets, and I'll let you explore the packet off the show notes. But in there, I have a little sheet where they can keep track of their work. So when they complete a Scratch card, they check it off and move on to another card. And I ask them to work with partners on these cards. Usually the partners will share a computer, but if they're both sitting and they have two computers, they can do the same card and help support each other. I ask that with each card, they get a new partner. And so what I'm trying to encourage the type of learning here is that collaborative learning that, you know, will be seen in the workplace of their futures, where they're going to be working with different people on different projects. And, you know, the belief is that people will come together for certain projects, and then those partnerships will disband as new projects are done. I want them to recognize that the more people they work with, the more ideas they're going to get from other people. So the final product is going to be with a partner as well. They're going to pick a partner that they want to work with later on. But all the partners that they've had up to that point will help with that final project, because the discussions that they're having along the way are going to generate ideas or questions or help support. And this is where that viral learning really takes place. Again, I try to keep myself out of the instruction, but at some points I have to get in. Kids will be struggling with a certain concept, and I will come in, I'll go, okay, this is how you do this. And usually I give them a solution that a student has taught me, because like I said, the students always figure out more about Scratch than I do. I teach one partnership, and then what I say is, when somebody else has this issue, you've got to teach them. So let's say there's an issue with XY coordinates and how to solve a problem or something. I might teach two people that, and then the next people that flag me down and say, we can't figure this out, I say, go over and see so-and-so because they're experts on it. And then, you know, it just keeps going. Those new people now need to teach somebody else that concept. So through viral learning, most of those concepts get passed on from group to group, and it's pretty exciting. So there's 12 cards that they have to get through, and then the following week I stop and we do one of the cards together, which is the glide card, and I'll let you explore that yourselves. But what that card is all about is really understanding XY coordinates, and without that understanding, you're going to be pretty hindered in programming with Scratch, at least trying to get your sprites, that's the characters that you have in Scratch, get your sprites moving along. So I first back up and I ask them, have they ever played Battleship, because that's XY coordinates, and we do some lessons with XY coordinates that I have on the internet, and I'll put those links in the show notes. And by the time that they understand XY coordinates, then we kind of do the glide card together, which is how you can move your sprite to a certain location and different ways to do that. So that's a great little geometry lesson there. The next lesson up is to give the students time for reverse engineering. The great thing about Scratch is that it has a social component to it, a social networking component. So when people create things in their Scratch programs, they can then sign up for an account at Scratch and upload their finished product. If somebody else has an account at Scratch, which is free, of course, then you're able to download that project and see how they made it. Actually look at all the programming that they put into this. You can then even take any component from any other creation and use that in your own product. Obviously, you're giving credit to the person that that created that in the first place. In fact, Scratch makes that very easy. As you upload your new project, usually automatically it'll say based on the work from so-and-so. So this is a great time for me to stop with the students and talk about copyright and to talk about Creative Commons license, which is a new concept to them, and to talk about open source, which Scratch is, and help them understand how, you know, a lot of the learning that's happening on the web now is being done through open source networks of just offering up information for free in ways that, you know, I never had at their age to be able to go and learn some things. And I also, you know, remind them, if you don't want your work from your project to be used by somebody else or taken apart, then you know, you don't want to upload that to the Scratch site. We go, at this point, we send home a letter asking parents to sign off for permission so that students can log into the Scratch site at school and even set up an account. But this is not necessary at all. They don't need an account for Scratch if parents are uncomfortable with that in any way. All finished products will be uploaded to the school site, and students can, if they still want to reverse engineer, then they'll be able to do that with me downloading projects. They don't need an account to do that. So I sent home a letter with the terms of service from Scratch that explains the Creative Commons license, and we read that together as a group. We talk about the importance of reading terms of service agreements and how also being part of that community, they have a role of keeping that community safe. Because anybody can upload anything to that community, there is the risk of somebody uploading something inappropriate. And it's the job of the rest of the community to flag that inappropriate material. And then the Scratch site people will pull that out of rotation, go and check it out. And if it is indeed inappropriate, they will pull it from the site. Now, this is a great time to also talk about digital footprints and that everything you do online can be tracked back to you. And so we talk about inappropriate content. You know, if you were to put something like that at the Scratch community, chances are you're going to lose your account. And then we talk about just that you're constantly leaving your IP address behind when you're on the internet for most intents and purposes. So great conversation comes out of this whole reverse engineering scenario. And then basically students at this point are offered another resource that, because of time, I offer it as an addendum, an optional reteaching tool. And that is these great Scratch videos that I will link to on the website from an entirely different site outside of Scratch. And how I talk to students that there's so much that you can learn on the internet just by watching videos, and you know that this is my learning modality that I appreciate best, is learning with a video where I can stop the video, go try things, comes back to the video, I can see how it's done, I can hear. An interesting part of this video is, as you head off to those links, you'll see that the people that have created these, there's a man and there's a woman in the different tutorials. And I don't know what country they're from, but they have an accent, a foreign accent. Now, the first year that I sent kids to listen to these videos, I had a lot of students, you know, in my first lesson, I hadn't really thought about the accent issue. And they stopped and they said, can you turn this into English? I can't understand this language. And I was confused, and I listened to the recording, and I said, that is English. They just have an accent. And students immediately, you know, didn't know how to deal with this. So this was a great opportunity, and all my lessons after that included this piece where I stopped and I talked, hey, we live in a global community. You're going to be working with people all over the world. You know, there are hurdles and boundaries and things that we'll have to get through to be able to have these global jobs. And here you are encountering a different language, or, you know, at least the accent, and struggling with that. What are some solutions that you can come up with to solve this issue? And right away in my first class, students came up with three issues right away with the video. They said, you could always listen to it again. It is a video. You could rewind it. Listen harder, someone said. And I said, what does that mean? And they said, you could turn up the volume a little and listen really carefully. And then the other solution was watch what this person is doing on the screen and use that information to help you understand. So, it was a real delight to hear that they could solve this problem right away, and that they no longer saw this as a cultural barrier, but as just part of how we work in the world. So that was pretty exciting. So at this point, when all the cards are done, then students are allowed to pick a partner and begin the planning of their final project. And for the past 2 years, I've left this pretty open-ended, but I do believe that this next year, I'm going to perhaps put more of a focus on at least the theme of the projects. Talking with Kathy Kahlo, our PE instructor, we may kind of do some double dipping here, two birds with one stone, if you will, and ask the fourth graders to do a project on some of the core values that we have in our school, or perhaps even with our 5210 initiative that is about a health initiative. So I'm kind of thinking about reining in a little bit of the freedom here in order to help keep things a little bit more focused. And again, that comes to the constraints of time, I think, more than anything. And also, I think, you know, it'll be a great way for students to be able to work, you know, in a slightly directed way. You know, you need to produce a product that will help educate people about X. Now you find out how you're going to do that with this program. You can do it in your, in your creative way with your own personal signature. So that's what we're thinking about for next year. But basically, students go off and they plan, and they have to identify, are they doing a game or a simulation or an animation, and start planning with a sketch and then writing down all the steps. I ask them to identify the audience for their finished product, and that's kind of a new concept to a lot of the students. They'll come up with a game and they'll say, I'll say, who's the audience? They'll say, everyone. And I'll say, okay, really? Does my dad want to play your game? You know, my 73-year-old dad. And they'll always pause there and say, oh, I don't know. And then on the other spectrum, I'll say, will this be appropriate for my non-reading kindergartners early in the year? And they'll have to reassess. And then usually they can come back and identify their audience and perhaps grade level or age level a little bit more, and think about the end user a little bit more. So they plan it out. They write their directions that are going to have to go with the finished product to the scratch site. And, I have them write that early, but I also tell them, you're probably going to change these directions throughout the process of making your finished product. And certainly by the end, you may have to rewrite those directions entirely. One of the litmus tests of the success of their project is that I or anybody else needs to be able to sit down with just their directions and be able to work and understand their project, how to start it and how to control the sprites or whatever is needed. So if the user can't do that, then they certainly need to go back and rewrite the directions. So they, you know, this is about three more sessions where they have time to create their own project. And what I love about this part is, as a teacher, you can't really prepare for where students are going to head with their projects. You really don't know what kind of creations they're going to come up with. And because we've examined other projects, they're definitely influenced by them. But every year, a lot of students come up with ideas that are just absolutely new and individual and totally unanticipated by me or anybody else in the class, which means that a lot of the programming has to be figured out on the fly. I know the basics of Scratch, but there are things that they want to do that, you know, they really got to get in and say, how are you going to solve this problem? Some problems are never solved. In fact, I had one group that, after we had talked so much about collaborative learning, this one group was trying to solve this problem. They had cars racing in the game, and they, when the cars got to the end, the sprite would say, "I win," but they wanted to be able to shut off the other car from being able to say that, because when the first one wins, then the second car comes along and it says, "I win too," because it touches the end sprite. Hopefully that makes sense. But in short, they had a problem and they couldn't figure it out. And I'm not sure that I could have figured it out. I didn't want to do too much thinking about it, but I was kind of stuck too. Well, at the end, the classes were, they spent hours trying to solve this. It was just amazing work they were doing. And finally, the solution that one of the partners came up with was, let's publish it and ask the Scratch community to help us with it. Now that's true collaborative learning, and that is the future of employment situations that these students are going to have, where, you know, the wisdom of crowds and we are smarter than me type of the books that we're reading these days, where that's really going to come into play with a lot of the work that they're going to be doing. So that was really amazing. At this point, I have people finishing at different times, and then they go and help other projects. And when they're done, I publish it. And if they've gotten permission to have their own account, they can publish it to their account as well. And I will, of course, provide the link to the past 2 years at the Scratch site for the Wes Kids, our Wells Elementary School site. Now, this year was an interesting year because for a lot of their development of their final projects, I was absent, and it was very hard not to be there. But I had some surgery, and I was recovering for about a month and out of school for about a month. And I had a great sub who understood all the concepts that I was trying to do with the project, but it was very hard not being there and watching the entire journey that these students were taking with it. So, there were varying degrees of how in-depth some of the projects went this year, and not as many got finished as the year before, and, you know, I blame myself for not being there to make sure that happened. It was very hard being out. But one thing that was very interesting is, before I left, I said, I'm going to ask you to make something from complete scratch, you know, no pun intended. Because one of the great things about this program is that, you can do some reverse engineering and pull in from other projects. But I wanted to just let the students try to create without pulling apart other people's projects and bringing that in. The first year that I did this, last year, I actually had one group of students that were trying to pass off some of the work that was already included in the Scratch program as exemplars of what you could do with Scratch. And this was really complicated programming. And I said, hey, show me how you did this. And I knew it was, you know, the template from within the program. And they really had no understanding of any of the programs. These were really sophisticated things that I hadn't shown them how to do. So that really wasn't good, you know, helping them out to learn it. But I did have a group this year that I came back and they had clearly done that. They had gone into one of the templates that ships with the program, reversed engineered it, and brought this into their own program. And so when I talked to them about it, they were really worried that they even said, are you mad at what we've done? I said, no, I'm not mad at all. You know, the only thing here was that I asked you not to, you know, use those resources, but let's look at what you've done. And what happened was, you know, they really started understanding how this program that they were using was made, and they were understanding some concepts like gravity, which is, you know, one of the programming pieces that I hadn't even shown them in Scratch. So they were really doing true reverse engineering and breaking it down. But they hadn't changed the project enough where I thought, you know, I asked them, I said, if you want to publish this, you can. I think you're going to get a lot of comments from people saying, hey, this is a ripoff. You haven't changed this project enough. And so they actually chose not to publish it. But the interesting conversation that the three of us had was, you know, had they done something inappropriate? And they thought that they had. Where, you know, and in education, you know, pretty much we're always saying, don't copy, don't use other people's work. But Scratch invites that. It invites you to reverse engineer, to go, and again, that lifelong kindergarten thing, to go up and see what somebody else has made and break it apart so that you understand how it was done. And there is so much that can be gained from that. So basically, they decided not to publish, and that was fine. The end product isn't really what this is all about. It's the process. So they spent the rest of the year understanding the program that they had incorporated more and, you know, more deeply, and just more reverse engineering and understanding what these commands were. And at the end of the year, they were able to show me things that I didn't know that they had figured out by taking this apart. What was interesting is during this conversation, I was only able to talk to one partner because the other partner was absent. So I said, let's talk about this. You know, we talked a little briefly about my concerns of them publishing and where we should go with this. So in that interim, in that little pause before we really got to a good place, the partner had gone back and told her teacher that, you know, that this had happened. And she kind of expressed it as she had done something wrong. And the teacher actually gave a whole, you know, talk about plagiarism, which is so interesting because then we all came together and, you know, we really had to ask ourselves, is this plagiarism? I mean, we have a Creative Commons here. Scratch invites you to take things apart. Where does it become your idea? Where does your signature come in where you really feel good about publishing this? Or again, was it a more worthwhile experience for these two to keep taking apart and trying to figure out how this program had been made by somebody else instead of creating something on a more basic level themselves? I don't know. That's a great question. I think that they enjoyed themselves a lot more being detectives and taking it apart and understanding what went into this program building. And again, that's what Scratch invites. So an interesting discussion that I will carry to the following years with students and really, really excited to hear their thoughts on this. So I see I'm coming up on the hour level with this show. You know, definitely I thought it would be about this long to try to get through all the experiences. I've left out all kinds of anecdotes and scenarios and things like that. But, you know, again, you know, go check it out yourself. It's a great tool. It to me, it helps encourage those 21st century skills that we want students to have, where they're the leader, where they're trying things, where they can find their own answers with resources in the community, in the Scratch community, in their own classroom community. That reverse engineering, I think, is priceless because they learn so much from being able to take apart a computer program. And they also, you know, have expressed that they're less afraid of computers because of this experience. And Seymour Papert talks about that a lot in his book, The Connected Family, you know, that everybody should at some point do some programming, because it takes the myth away from, you know, computers being these absolutely complicated, mysterious machines that we think we're going to break, you know. I definitely see that happening with students. They absolutely enjoy this. And, you know, I had one group this year, I will tell this one anecdote, these two girls that were really struggling with some concepts of what they were trying to do. They were building this ice cream maker. And, oh my gosh, they just stuck with it so long and worked so hard and asked to come in at recess. And they went through all their struggles together, and you know, the ups and downs of feeling defeated, and then, you know, feeling the hooray, we figured this out. And they were so pleased at the end of their project, and they worked so hard on this. And it's an outstanding application for me to use with my kindergartners next year for following a sequence of directions. That's how I will use this. You'll see it if you go to our site. You'll see the ice cream cone maker, and they were so pleased to hear that as well, that this was going to have authentic purpose, that I'd be using this in my lessons. So, you know, I think that is also sort of where I'm thinking, giving that little bit of direction that your product has to serve a purpose might help some students feel even more engaged, because their product is going to teach about our core curriculums, let's say, or that 5210 health initiatives. Anyway, I'm going to wrap it up here. I'm sure I've left out so much. Please, in the comments, ask any questions that you'd like. Please add on to the conversation. I'd love to hear how you're using Scratch, and I'm sure there's so many ways that I haven't even thought about. You know, either leave me a voice message or comment in the comment section, and I really look forward to continued conversations around this program. Hopefully I'll get to see, I don't know if Mitch Resnick will be at BLC again this year. He's a frequent contributor, and if you ever get a chance to see him or any of his crew speak about Scratch, by all means, check it out. Thanks for listening. I know this was a long one. I hope you're taking a long commute somewhere and this got you through it. This is Bob Sprankle with Bit by Bit, and thanks again.